The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. I could go on, but we'll leave it there. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin to my right.
Yo.
To your left. How you doing, man?
Doing great.
Good?
Doing swell.
Drew Dinsick on the show momentarily, going to talk NFL and a little tennis with him. Drew and I, Wyatt Tomchak doesn't even know this, so I have to pass this on. Emergency U.S. Open podcast on Thursday.
Woo! Heads up, Wyatt.
The draw is coming out Thursday morning, so we get to do a post-draw Thursday podcast on the U.S. Open. So looking forward to that, but he'll be here momentarily. Talk primarily football with us. Paul Spohr on baseball a little later. Kelly and I are going full-out sports talk radio later on the show. We couldn't be more excited. You know what I'm talking about here, Kelly?
Oh, I do.
NFL quarterback power rankings. That's right. We're not too highbrow to stoop to this level. Top 10 quarterbacks, National Football League. We want to spend one segment of our lives living in the shoes of these sports talk people.
I mean, what would be a big difference, though, of us talking, you know, like you can compare these to MVP odds. Usually the guys that are near the top anyways.
That's correct. But it's also an off season where it's an interminable off season. And this one feels like, July lasted 60 days. It is a way of just sort of calibrating, and the beauty of it is always, I will let the hate wash over me as you will as well.
Because oh, there's going to be some that people hate.
Everyone's going to be pissed about this. Right?
Should I drop the early stats that I texted you?
What early stats?
Of just some of the trends from the two of ours.
Oh, okay, sure.
So there are Gil and I do have the same top six quarterbacks. Listed in different orders, though.
Okay. Oh.
And okay. Then after that, there are six quarterbacks that appear on one of our lists and not the others.
So it's mayhem after that.
Yeah, and I believe there's multiple Super Bowl winners that are left off there.
But the funny part about it is people will go nuts that both you and I, but I'll use mine. People go nuts that I will have left off certain quarterbacks in the top 10, as inevitably it is for everybody. And the comedy of it is, oh, you're really that upset that I have them 11 or 12
right,
or 13,
yeah.
Right? Like, so we'll get into it. We'll defend our position. That's the thing. We'll defend our position.
That was the best part, though, when you texted me yesterday. You're like, how many are we doing? I'm like, just do 10 because it's funnier when we see who we left off.
My text was, are we doing all 32? That would have been funny. See who 32 was. Okay. We will get to all that. And let me start with the bad. Yesterday, after what was nothing but winning tennis bets since the beginning of the Olympics, both clay then and hardcourt, yesterday the old market correction. Oh boy. If you bet tennis 350 days a year, this will happen. A big offer. And Katie Valiunets, again, over 40 cents of CLV, had a match point. You know how this goes. There are just days where you know once the first one loses or the second one loses, you're like, oh, I get it. Anything that can happen here will go wrong. So we lost them all yesterday. 0-4 here on the show, 0-5 for subscribers. It was a bad day, just bad all around. We lost on the previous day on Bedosa when she was 53 cents CLV. Who was it, Sharapan, that has those pictures of the CLV trash cans around Vegas? The trash cans that have CLV stenciled on them?
Oh, no, I haven't caught that. That's great.
It's C Las Vegas. I don't know what the C stands for, but they're all over town. Anyway, those are all those tickets
awesome.
Go. So that was bad. And maybe it serves me right for playing Winston-Salem in Cleveland right before the U.S. Open. But, you know. That's how the cookie crumbled. I only have one today. I'm on Victoria Golubic. She is a Swiss player. She's plus 183 again. Put these out last night. VSiN.com/picks. Every host, every guest, every sport. It is in there. That happens to be my only one going up against number one seed in this tournament in Cleveland. Tennis in the land is what they call it. Going up against Beatriz Haddad-Maia, Brazilian, who is not playing her best tennis this year. I don't think it should be anywhere near the plus 180 that you can still get it at. So that's the only tennis play. It's one of these two, Kelly, where you like, you know, when you anticipate a meeting and a collection and you're expecting a pile and then you have a day like that, that's a haircut and you just get so angry about it.
Yeah.
It's brutal, 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 brutal day. All right. Baseball. Did a podcast with Mark Borchardt yesterday. Q3, quarter three derivative show, Major League Baseball. We deep dive on first five inning stuff, on first inning stuff. I encourage you to go listen to that after the show at Beating the Book.
Great stuff, as always.
Mark is outstanding.
Hey, you guys are both awesome talking baseball. I think, and always, I love when you do those because it's the like I said this early in the year, but it applies even now. It's if you've missed anything too, it's such a great catch-up vehicle.
It's a catch-up vehicle. It's not about also the narrative. It's about what is predictive here moving forward. And he has historical umpire numbers. So again, like, you know, you may have a total position on a baseball game, but if a certain umpire is back there, it should probably take you off if that umpire is historically and matching with this year's sort of performance behind home plate calling balls and strikes. So it's great. But it occurred to me as I was doing that podcast, and he had an appearance on the show yesterday, and we talked baseball with others, that maybe we should get into what is the single best bet? What do I believe is the single best bet that exists right now this morning for the rest of the season? And again, we're just under a quarter of the season left, so 30-some games for everybody. These are the best records in baseball right now. Jeff Passan highlighted this the other day. We touched on it. These are the top 10 teams in baseball. There happen to be five in the AL. There happen to be five in the NL. They are separated by four games in the standings, if you would put them all in the same standings, right? The Phillies have the best, 73-51. And then it is just like stair steps down, half steps all the way down to the D-backs at 70-56. A total of four games separate those 10 teams. So if we go to the best record in baseball, I mentioned that I bet the Diamondbacks at 40-1 the other day. The second column here, for those watching, those are the current odds to have the best record in baseball. Those are not World Series odds as we've listed. Those are the best record in baseball odds. You can get the Diamondbacks much longer than I got them at. They're at 75-1, not 40-1. But as you look up and down that, you see that the Dodgers are the short shot to have the best record, plus 160. The Yankees are next, plus 255. And that correlates with the remaining strength of schedule. What you see on the far right is the aggregate win percentage of their remaining opponents. So the lower, the easier, in other words. And the Dodgers do have, of these 10 teams, the easiest remaining schedule, aggregate win percentage of remaining opponents, 491. The Yankees, second easiest, 493. By the way, the Royals of these 10 teams have the hardest remaining schedule, 530 is the aggregate win percentage of their remaining opponents collectively. So is there a bet here beyond like what I said the other day where I'm backing the Diamondbacks? I've got the Diamondbacks not only for this, I've got them for number one seed. I've got them to face the Royals at 400-1 in the World Series. And the truth is, because of the strength of schedule and because of the odds, yeah, I mean, could I say to you, hey, I think the Diamondbacks at 75-1 is still a great bet? Sure. Could I say, you know, could you make a case for the Padres, by the way, at 35-1, who are only three games behind the Phillies for the best record, only two in the win column, if you will, at 35-1 with a remaining strength of schedule, 499? Sure, I could, but it's not like I say it with any degree of huge conviction. So the question is, okay, if not this market, then maybe there is something derivative, or maybe there is something, you know, that is a cousin of this that there is. And so yesterday we touched upon seeding. By the way, those numbers, those odds were a courtesy of DraftKings. DraftKings also has seeding. And number one, number two, all the way down to number six seeds in both the American League and the National League. And there, Kelly,
yep,
is where I believe you find the finest bet that remains. And so you say, okay, well, what is that? The first place you should look would be, you know, okay, the American League, you've got, you know, what seeding is kind of like looks clearer than others. Well, the Astros to be the number three seed does, but it is reflected in the price, right? They are, what, minus 285 or something like that?
Minus 280 right now.
Minus 280 to be the number three seed. So there's no value there but that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a possibility of, okay, what is a clear picture on a seed? The problem with the number one seeds is there's too much of a logjam in the American League on that, right? Orioles, Yankees, Guardians, they're all too bunched together, and the prices, you know, are
Yankees minus 110, O's plus 270, Guardians 4-1.
And I don't feel like there's enough value there. Also, based on the schedules we just talked about, the Yankees have the easiest one of the bunch. The Orioles equally easy, by the way. So it's really a coin flip. I don't know that I could back a bet there. However, in the National League number one seed, I do believe there is a bet. And that, sir, is on a team that is only one game out of the number one seed, and they have the third easiest schedule. Well, the fourth, because there's a tie. The fourth easiest schedule remaining on that board. and that is the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers, to get the number one seed, are plus 550. Plus 550 for a team that is only one game behind the Phillies for the number one seed currently. They have a 499 remaining strength of schedule. Again, aggregate win percentage of their remaining opponents, 499. Again, fourth easiest on the board of the ones we mentioned. And they're still plus 550. That's probably the best current bet that I see. Also, by the way, for other seeds in the wild cards, fours and fives, too crowded in the American League to determine who's going to end up with a specific seed, too crowded in the National League. So I do think that's the play.
Well, it sounds like the AL ones, you wouldn't suggest playing at all, right?
No, at all.
Because the two seed even applies to the one seed situation,
that's what I mean.
Right? The one seed's too jumbled. Someone's going to fall to the two seed.
And you know, to those who ask, what about a six seed in the National League? Still also two. Mm. You know, the Braves are priced as a favorite, as they should be, even though the Mets are only a game and a half behind. Giants, 3.5 behind. So to me, if you had to play one bet in either of these markets, it is the Brewers at plus 550, because I think... For a team that's only one game out here and has a relatively easy schedule, I mean, could you make a case about the Padres, too? You could, I suppose.
I mean, wouldn't you sprinkle then a little on the 11-1 for best regular season record?
Talk about with the Brewers?
Yeah, if you were going to bet that.
Yeah, you could. But again, I just, you know, plus 550 not having to deal with all the teams in the American League.
Right.
I kind of like it a little better. But anyway, to the question of what's the best bet, I think that's on the board right at this moment. That's it. We'll talk to Drew Dinsick on the NFL on the other side, including interesting kickoff rule information. That's next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Bar Canada, the Barrage, here at Bar Canada, the D, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, and Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, joins us, co-host of the Deep Dive and NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast. And I just want to start by saying I am such a rude human being, because Drew is not only doing this show, he's agreed to do the U.S. Open podcast on Thursday after the show. So he's just like, he's always there for me. And then the poor guy has COVID, and I failed to mention that he's playing hurt here. You are convinced you got COVID at Bet Bash, yes?
Oh, yeah, surely. I mean, the timing was, I mean, it could have been in the airport, who the heck knows, but it was definitely traveling to Las Vegas and back, because, within like 2 days, it was like, oh, wait a second, what's that scratchy feeling in the back of my throat? Oh, yeah, this is familiar, yeah. And just for the record, COVID got me. It's in trouble here. it has no hope. It's one of the kind of sad truths of our time now. Like, yeah, if you travel it in the summer, like, you're gonna get it.
It should be pointed out that Drew and COVID have a fascinating history. When the pandemic actually happened in 2020, MIT Sloan Sports Conference happened, as it always does, and you know, end February, beginning March, so right before the world ended, basically, in 2020. Everybody at that conference on the gambler side, every sports bettor, got COVID except for this dude right here. And you are convinced, Drew, because we thought Drew was like, oh my God, what's this guy must be this incredible human being. But what is your theory as to why you didn't get it?
Because I had already had it
before we even knew what it was called.
I had just gotten over it.
Yeah.
Actually, kind of a funny, weird coincidental story, I guess, is the last three times I've put on a black tie, I've gotten COVID. It was January 2020. I went to a black tie in downtown LA. There were some people we were hanging out with, ironically, some who had traveled, just gotten back from China, mainland China, like visiting family and stuff around, you know, Christmas, New Year's, and they were feeling sick. And I was like, oh man, that's a bummer. And then sure enough, like, that was the sickest I ever got in my life. And it was like, oh, COVID's not in the United States. It was very much in the United States. And I'm very sure that I had it at that time. And so, yeah, I didn't get it at Sloan when everyone else did. But then, yeah, sure, the second time I got it, same sort of deal, like, hey, celebrating COVID's over, they're having a big industry black tie thing. I show up and bang. you know, COVID number two.
That suit then, does it every time.
Three for three every time. Yeah. Well, I don't know what
you,
it is.
You spread it in Hawaii a couple times too, right?
He has spread it in Hawaii.
Yeah. Taking it to Hawaii with me after I got out of black tie in LA. That was fun.
Brutal. All right. Let's do rapid fire on all this stuff. It's not funny, but it's not. Thank you for being here, despite being under the weather, as they say. So, or under the virus. Okay. Real quick now, off air, we said, give me the teams in the NFL that you are above market on and the ones that you are below market on.
Sure. So market ratings comparisons, just like generically, how far off am I like ranking wise? And you know, because power number wise, there's some huge differences. For me, I'm at Seattle like +2.5. Market's at like -1.5. So Seattle is at the top of my list of teams that I have, you know, that I'm very bullish on right now. The other one that is like relatively new, Houston right now is ranked 11th in overall in terms of power rating, with just under 2 by Unpredictable. I am closer to 6. I think this Houston team is very, very legit. I am kind of at this point now stacking some Houston like superlative type of awards and kind of number one seed type of opinions right now, because I like, this is kind of the perfect storm here. I don't know what else you needed to see from them in the offseason that they're going to be able to start the season hot with the, you know, everybody has maintained perfect health throughout this process. You have a quarterback and a wide receiver room that is so in sync that, you know, it has perfect chemistry that they are going to hit the ground running, in my opinion. And you have a defense led, you know, that anchored by, you know, Danielle Hunter, who looks like a defensive player of the year candidate, pretty obviously. And it's like, this is all of a sudden, this is going to be a very good team right out of the gate. And their schedule is not especially hard to start out either. So most of their kind of games that would spook you as far as for getting a one seed or winning a division come later in the season, like week 15, 16, 17, Dolphins, Chiefs, Ravens. Like, yeah, that's a tough stretch in a vacuum, but who the heck knows if the Dolphins or the Ravens are going to be any good by the time we get to December. And then, you know, I think you kind of look at the beginning here where number one, I bet them number one week one at the Colts. I think that number should be past 3, and you can still get it under 3 right now. And then you go on a nice little stretch against the Bears, Vikings, Jags, where, you know, starting out 4-0 here, considering that you've gotten all of your offense on the field and getting good reps together in the preseason, feels very realistic to me. So I think CJ Stroud and the Texans and DeMeco Ryans and, you know, Danielle Hunter, everybody that you want to see performing well and staying healthy is checking all of those boxes right now. So this team is probably, in my opinion, going to take a leap from outside the top 10 by market rating to top 5. And so I have the two biggest differences. We've talked about Seattle. Mike McDonald is the angle there. And then Houston, I think, is going to be absolutely in the mix for an AFC, and excited to see what those two teams look like.
And then lower than market, you have?
Lower than market is Pittsburgh, who we just talked about. I think they're a bottom 6 team. I think they very well could have the fewest wins. And then I'm lower on Chicago. This might be just a little bit of not buying into Shane Waldron and Caleb Williams hitting the ground and lighting the world on fire out of the gate. Some questions a bit about that Chicago front 7. Besides, you know, I think their secondary is very good, but a little bit worried about how they're generating pass rush. Besides Montez Sweat, a lot of questions about the health of the offensive line for Chicago. Once they get into real game action, they could find themselves in a little bit of a tough spot here, as they've had very, very unlucky health wise on the in the trenches really this whole process. So Chicago's low for me. And then lastly, Baltimore. I'm still high on Baltimore. They're a top 10 team for me, but the market consistently kind of, depending on who you ask, like they're squarely the third best team right now. I think they're the third shortest in terms of future price after KC and San Francisco. They're clearly the second choice in the AFC. And that's not what I see when I look at this team and I look at this roster. I have questions about their offensive line. I have questions about changing defensive coordinators. Honestly, if I'm high on Mike McDonald in Seattle, then it comes to logic that I would be low on Baltimore's defense this year as we kind of reinvent the wheel drill a little bit. I know it's somebody who was within his tree, so it shouldn't be lots of changes. And I know that ultimately the personnel hasn't changed that much. Roquan Smith is still amazing. Kyle Hamilton is still amazing. But, you know, if you take a little bit of heat off your Baltimore D rating and you still have him as a top five, but not a, you know, a threat for top one, and then you take some heat off of the offense with the turnover at the offensive line, I'm coming in more like around a plus five for Baltimore, which would put me, put them at seventh best team in the NFL for me. And honestly, I have almost a 2-point margin between KC and Baltimore, which means opening night, I got a big, old bet on KC. I think you can still get -2.5 at around -110 if you shop around. And I think that closes three. It may close three juicy if we're being honest, because I think, you know, KC to me again looks like they're ready to start the season hot, as opposed to years past where they have played no one in the preseason and they haven't really shown you anything. It does feel like they're gonna, you know, be a little bit more engaged in the first quarter of the season this year, with how much we've seen them, you know, kind of trying to get the offense on the right foot to start the season. And I think in general people are a little low on the skill position group, which looks to be a lot better than last year.
All right, Drew on Kansas City week one. Drew, will you accept a question from a Stephen Fezzik? He asked via text. He says, Drew likes select overs NFL week one. I am scared blankless to play any overs right now after every single preseason game went under. We have to put some stock in it, but maybe not that much. What are his thoughts?
I mean, it's too late for me to back out that long. I'm in pretty good shape on these, though. Like the ones I picked, by the way, I'm on 48.5 for Jags Dolphins. I think that should start with a five. I'm on Giants Vikings. I don't feel great about that one with the way that the Giants quarterback situation is unfolding, but again, too late here. I'm on over 48 for Buffalo Cardinals. I would take that one back if I could, now that we're starting to get a little bit of I still think that's two bad defenses, really, which is why that one is kind of intriguing to me, with, you know, two good quarterbacks, one great, one good quarterback, and two bad defenses potentially. I think over 48 still it's fine there, but I don't love it as much. Commanders Tampa Bay, that one is that one's solid. I think both of these teams could get into the high 20s in that game, maybe even low 30s, and that's sitting at 42. That to me is not correct. And then Titans Bears is on the board for me as well at 43.5, mostly because I think the Titans defense is overrated coming into this. You know, both defenses I think are overrated coming into the season. That one should be on the north side of 44. So you know, I'm nervous too. Like I don't love how little you're getting out of these offenses in the preseason, but you're seeing a lot of vanilla scheme and concept. And so once they start calling the good plays, hopefully it'll turn.
Are you skipping week three of the preseason entirely?
I haven't bet anything week three, and I don't think I will.
I don't think I will either. Yeah. Drew Dinsick, everybody. Feel better, Drew. And for God's sakes, I apologize for not saying that earlier. Drew Dinsick, COVID machine is what he is. Thank you, Drew. @whale_capper. We'll come back. NFL quarterback rankings and this kickoff information. That's pretty interesting. Next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you missed episode one of Circa Survivor, the quest for $9.2 million, you can watch it now at VSiN.com. 5-part docuseries taking you inside the high-stakes world of the annual Circa Survivor contest. Follow the contestants as they make all-or-nothing picks over the 2023 NFL season and go behind the scenes of the world's largest legal betting contest. Several VSiN hosts make appearances along the way to offer their advice. You can watch episodes 2 through 5 next week, Monday through Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on VSiN.com and YouTube TV, as well as a live broadcast on X. Go to VSiN.com/Survivor for details or to watch episode one. We got a tweet about that. Let me read that one first as we get through the tweets. This one is from the numbers guys. Watching part one of the Survivor doc yesterday, I never realized how good looking the majority of sports gamblers are. I'm going to say that sarcastic. Let's see here. This is from...
I don't know if it's sarcastic or did we actually pick, like, did the production company purposely pick?
Yeah. I took it as sarcastic. Let's see. Cheap Prop Bets 21. Oh, this is in response. I reposted our thing about, you know, which team above -150 to make the playoffs will actually miss. I had the Bills. You had the Dolphins. Graham, my answer is the Bills. This is from Cheap Prop Bets 21. He said Dallas already made a bet for them to miss the playoffs at +205. Sia will be on the show tomorrow. Sia Najad, he says he's on fading the Bills this year as well. He'll be on the show tomorrow to discuss some NFL futures and PGA picks. He's got some sneaky teams in the AFC who he think can make a lot of noise this year, he says. Answer that question. Dolphins, Dallas, and Baltimore. Bye-bye.
I'm guessing that's a separate Sia tweet that you just read.
From
Sia Najad? No, yeah, is that a separate Sia Najad tweet?
No, Sia just is literally tweeting us what he's going to talk about on the show tomorrow.
Thanks, Sia.
Plus underscore money. He's using Twitter as a promo for what he's going to do on the show. Yeah. Plus underscore money says he thinks Dolphins, Dallas, Baltimore. Bye-bye. Greg Jones, who was part of the Survivor Chop last year, he says Packers. Love could easily regress. Talk about Jordan Love.
There's a couple of those I kind of want to talk about.
Circus Survivor Champion 23. Great first episode. Favorite part was Crack and Gil talking about how difficult of a contest it really is.
Yeah, that was my favorite part, too.
Just to follow, Vison says, how dare anyone say Green Bay, but I know it's not shocking. Cowboys seem like the best bet up there if they were in any other division. Falcons. Michael Harrison, I honestly feel like things are just not going to go right for the Niners. I'd take a shot at them missing. Terry Elkins got the 2020 sports betting book, Think Like a Pro, from Logan Fields. He says Kelly gave up too quickly.
Yeah. That statement could apply to a lot of things in my life. Yep.
Derby Day Day, Brewers number one seed plus 950 on FanDuel.
Ooh,
that's a nice price.
Yeah, right, shop there. Around. We mentioned that Steelers bet too. I saw someone tweet in.
And DePriest, I like the Ravens to miss. He said Sal this morning made some great points. I assume he means Palantonio. Let's see. Manny Davison, are Steelers unders an auto bet this season then if they can't score two touchdowns in a game and are going to be a top five defense? Well, I've bet them under an alternate under.
This one's so tough. Like, we've laid it out. We've talked about it a ton. I've also bet it like 3 years in a row, though, and been burnt by it every single year.
Chance Copper.
Jump on board with me, though. I'll take all the fellow bettors I can get.
Survivor episode one was absolutely fantastic. I'm so jacked up for Survivor now, maybe more than the sushi spot. 3 days till sushi, everybody. I spent hours last night looking at schedules. I think I'm going to use two on the Bills week one. What say you? I have not gotten to Survivor week one yet. I have not gotten.
Yeah, I haven't really either. I did make some week one bets, though, yesterday.
What'd you bet?
I laid 2.5 with the Falcons against the Steelers. Those are the 2.5s were drying up, so those wanted to get ahead of that. And then also, I did tag along. I mean, I've heard Drew. I've heard a couple people bring it up. The Dolphins Jags over. I had 49. I know the 48.5's gone. 49 not the best, but the 49s are quickly disappearing too. And it's getting closer, like Drew said, 49.5, and then the 50s. And then I just joined him on Chiefs 2.5 too. Laid that. I was kind of looking at that already. But you know, first game of the year. Yeah, Drew pushed me over the edge. Was already leaning that way, but 2.5 are kind of moving. Couple comments on the teams. I don't know if that point with the Packers is being discussed enough. Like, I want to love Jordan Love, and I think he's really good. But yeah, it's a small sample size that it feels like a lot of people are really buying into.
It is, but go back a year ago, I was the one saying to everybody, because everybody thought Jordan Love sucked, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like, and how many times did I say, nope, when you hold a clipboard under the same system for years, you tend to actually be good when you come out of that. Because we don't have that in modern day, right? Yep. And I went through the whole thing about all the skins quarterbacks, right? Mark Rippon, Trent Green, Stan Humphries, all these guys that nobody thought were going to be any good. But you sit there with a clipboard for years. Back then, you end up good. And that's what happened with Jordan Love. So maybe he is that.
I think he is.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying I don't know that we know based off of what we've seen far.
And by the way,
the Ravens one's interesting.
Much of that will be incorporated into our quarterback rankings coming up as well.
Yes, it will.
Here's the thing about the Ravens, though, I have to tell you. They are solid at number three running back. I just want to tell you that. Shout out to O if he makes the team.
I mean, you know me. Like, I am not the biggest Lamar Jackson guy, but I'd be a little shocked if the Ravens fall that far this year.
Well, Drew said, he goes, I just don't have him third best. I have him seventh best. So let's not go crazy, right?
Yeah, but that's...
And the thing is...
That's significant to me, though, for when we're talking about a team that was that good last year.
It is, but like people who say they're going to miss the playoffs, it might happen, but I'm going to let you guys bet that because I'm not going against that organization. No,
that's kind of my point. I'm not doing that either.
The one other interesting thing about the Fezzik question to Drew about the totals and stuff, obviously the massive unders here in the first 2 weeks of preseason, as we documented yesterday, the NFL put in this new kickoff rule this year, obviously. And the point was, after all of these years of trying to legislate the kickoff out, the NFL is really skittish about points, the point environment lessening obviously, you know, Chicks Love the Long Ball was the old Glavin Maddox commercials. Chicks dig the long ball. What did I say? Like? Yeah, chicks dig the long ball. Of course they didn't say it. Chicks dig the long ball. So the NFL is really worried about the scoring environment coming down. And, you know, they were legislating the kickoff out of it under the guise of we want player safety. Well, they decided because of the scoring environment coming down and their fear of it going even lower with bad quarterback play and what else, you know, what else they could possibly give as a reason for it. So the new rule was designed to raise the rate of return and the threat of big plays after years of increasing touchbacks. So the average starting position through two weekends of exhibition games, Kelly, is now the 28.3-yard line. That's according to the NFL, up 4.4 yards from this point last season. But now here's the, by the way, through 2 weeks of the preseason, the unders are 26-6, as we talked about. So 4.4 yards forward, up to the 28.3-yard line. But here's the deal. This is because 28.3-yard line is so close to the 30, which is where you start on a touchback anyway, mm-hmm. that now it appears there's some talk that teams are now just going to blanket kick it out and we're just going to start at the 30 every time now. Because if the average is 28.3, why risk a big play?
Yeah.
So there's that. And by the way, next year they're considering making it a 35-yard line to either, I don't know if it's to prevent the touchback, the sort of de facto touchback, to make it a exciting play, and to also then increase scoring because he shortens the field kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty interesting that 4.4 yards has gotten to them, has achieved what they were looking for, but now it's so close to the 30, now they just might kick it through the end zone anyway.
All right, so two things. I'm very interested to see week one what actually the kickoffs are going to look like. Because if it was very different from what we've seen in the preseason, I won't be shocked by that.
Wouldn't be the first time we saw like anything in the preseason, like referees being told to call something, officials being told to call something, and all of a sudden it disappears week one.
I also wouldn't be surprised, though, if it looks basically the same. And like you said, most teams are just like, we're just going to boot out back the end zone, and the NFL has to reevaluate this rule. Because I do think the biggest point was to try to make the kickoffs a thing again, right? And if it's going to continue that way, then that's a problem. The biggest question I have, this is probably for Steve Fezzik or something like that, but is this the over 4 yards worth of starting field position above from what we've seen a year ago? Is this more of a, the proof is kind of proven out for what the handicap was on the overs, and it just hasn't gotten there the rest of the way, and still going to be looking that way, looking overs heading into week one? Or is it, it's like you're saying, it's still close to the 30, and that's just where teams are going to start, and the unders are what they are. I don't know if that all made sense.
No, I think the answer to your broad question, I don't know if I understood it exactly, but the answer is, anybody who thinks so surely that they know something, right? Like, Fez has a huge brain. He was an actuary. The man knows stuff, right? But, you know, he came in here, he's like, yes, it will increase scoring 1.7 points, whatever he said. Yeah. Like, he was so sure about it. Yeah. And I just think you can't be, right? You can't be until we all see this play out. Right now, it looks like just sort of a glorified running play, right? Where like teams are getting a slightly larger head start on a running play. We will not know the answer to any of these questions until a few weeks are played out. As far as a betting market is concerned, I don't think, they always lag in adjustment. So there could be opportunities, but all of our best theories might be bunk.
Mm-hmm.
So we might be way ahead of our skis on this. Time will tell. It's all we can tell at this point. We'll come back. Tennis next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you missed episode one of Circus Survivor, the quest for $9.2 million, you can watch it now at VSiN.com. This 5-part docuseries takes you inside the high-stakes world of the annual Circus Survivor contest. Follow the contestants as they make all-or-nothing picks over the 2023 NFL season and go behind the scenes of the world's largest legal betting contest. Several VSiN hosts make appearances along the way to offer their advice. You can watch episodes 2 through 5, by the way, next week, Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on VSiN.com and YouTube TV, as well as a live broadcast on X. Go to VSiN.com/Survivor for details or to watch episode one. Were you in this at all, Kelly?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that you're aware.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I was, what did I say yesterday? I was never interviewed for anything. So unless I'm just caught in the background or something, which I do remember there was one or two days where I walked remember one day I walked over there like, hey guys, what's going on over here? I'm like, you're in the middle of filming a documentary. Sorry.
Again, it was a year ago. So it was so long ago, you forget what you said, you forget. But when they edited it together, like they pitted me and Crack against each other.
That was funny.
It was so great.
That was good.
I can't wait to see that with Crack the Thursday. But it was cool. I can't wait for episodes 2 through 5. Again, Circus Survivor, the quest for $9.2 million. And again, in episode one, Stormy prominently featured, as was Pamela Maldonado. So it was very interesting. First episode of that, again, 2 through 5, coming next week. Paul Spore joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line right now. You can follow him on Twitter at Spore, S-P-O-R-E-R. He comes to us from FanGraphs, every baseball dork's Bible. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm doing well. How about you, Gil?
I'm good. Kelly just asked me a couple segments ago, done or not done, we did an exercise of the 6 most prominent MLB awards markets, both MVPs, both Cy Youngs, both rookies of the year. I said, and I want to see if you agree or disagree, I said, again, barring injury here, both MVPs are done. It's going to be Judge and Shohei. And that AL Cy, sadly, because I have a Lugo ticket, is also done. The rest are still alive. You say?
I don't know. Look, I'm wearing the Tigers cap. That's my guy, Scoobs. But there was a quote, yes. I think just yesterday, AJ Hinch, I'm sure you covered this, right?
Yes, we did.
It's his last start on regular rest, probably. So what might that do? Reagan's and your boy Lugo, they're in a pennant chase. You know, they're in a fight. They need to do everything that they can. They might be piling up the innings. We know how these narratives get written down the stretch. I am not ready to call it. Love Scoob. He's my vote right now. But as far as a bettor's market, I don't think you have to call it yet, because the Tigers do not have any reason to push him. I actually do agree with this. I understand like the award piece too, where like maybe Scoobs will be bummed out. But again, they're not going to shut him down. So
that's what I'm saying.
But also make sure I'm not overstating it to suggest that he's not going to pitch anymore. But I am wondering if that narrative can build a bit. Like, what if Kirby gets on a run too? What if the offense actually wakes up and starts supporting him as well as he's pitched? But I think the Royals guys, Lugo and Reagans, are the two threats right now that could maybe sneak up, and maybe Gilbert too. I don't want to sleep on Gilbert completely.
Well, again, obviously holding the Lugo ticket, I hope you're right. But you made the point there, which I think a lot of bettors immediately leapt to this. Oh, they're shutting him down. They never said they're shutting him down.
No.
Yeah, he's just gonna slow play him the rest of the way. In other words, whether that's
where they can.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. But extra day where they can.
Yeah.
Early out if the offense gets going. You know, they've really infused that offense too. Listen, I'm a Tigers fan. Again, I'm wearing the hat, so I'm looking at the positive side of things. But I love the youth infusion that they've just done this past week, turning over that lineup. So, you know, maybe they get Scooble some leads. He comes out an inning or two early. It's that sort of stuff. So don't be fearful if you're holding the Scooble ticket, but just don't rip up your other pitcher tickets. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I won't rip them up. I won't go that far.
I know you.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing I mentioned earlier, we talked about, what's the best single rest of season bet that remains on the board? And I gave my vote to, you can bet seedings at places like DraftKings. Number one seed National League, Brewers are +550. They're one game behind the Phillies for the best record right now, and their schedule is relatively easy, just a 499 aggregate strength of schedule, 499 aggregate win percentage of the remaining opponents. +550 on the Brewers. You likes?
Yo, this is why you're the best, man. Yeah, I really do like this. This is pretty sharp here. Phillies, we're not going to crush them. I can't even imagine that they even care that much, that they're in a little bit of a lull. They of all teams know how it is to get hot at the right moment. So, they're hitting a little downshift right now. Maybe they turn it up in September right in time for the playoffs or even in the playoffs. But by no means are they going to necessarily have to push, because Atlanta, another huge loss with Riley.
Yes.
What if they're able to downshift entirely Philly down the stretch to where they don't even care? They'll have a bye. Maybe. Well, I guess that I just kind of caught myself there, though. If they are fighting for that bye, maybe they do have to kind of go full bore because LA's standing there, too.
Yeah.
So they can't downshift entirely. The division does feel pretty good, though, right now. After the Riley injury, I just don't see how the Braves bounce back from that one. It's another huge player that's gone. But I like the Brewers' take. I don't love it as much now that I'm thinking that Philly does have to kind of still grind for a bye seed, though.
I was talking about this, by the way, the Austin Riley thing. Again, another Braves injury. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. And yet, somehow, because the Mets just have been, you know, just a big disappointment here in August, they just refuse to, they were for a moment. They took a brief lead for one night for that sixth and final seeding, the last wild card spot, if you will, in the NL. But then the Braves took it right back. And the Braves have a 1.5 game lead over the Mets right now, 3.5 over the Giants. I'm curious, do you feel that the 12 teams that are currently in playoff position are in fact going to be the 12 teams that are in the postseason?
I can't lock the Braves in right now.
That's
the only one,
right?
Spot blows. Yeah. You know, Gio Urshela can come over there and stabilize the position defensively, picked up off the waiver wire from the Tigers, but he's not going to bring an Austin Riley bat, even a muted Austin Riley bat. It's just another body blow for them. I do think the Mets are the Mets, though. And, you know, I've pushed back against that narrative at times, and then they make me look stupid by doing something Metsy. So it's the Giants that I think could actually really storm the castle.
And yes. You know,
I even mentioned it the last time we were together. I gave them some, but I'm really coming around. I'm big time sold on Ryan Walker as the closer. Snell, Webb, Ray is a hot 1-2-3. So
just
you
get him in. Just gotta get in.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we'll see where they can go. I really think that they're kind of the sneaky one more than the Mets to take out the Braves there. In addition to the Braves coming down and the Giants going up.
Yeah.
It's a world where the get in now.
If the Giants get in, boy, oh boy. San Francisco, again, I say this all the time. That city just becomes fantastic when the Giants are doing well. It's just this remarkable thing.
Same sort of carve out. Sorry, not to take a whole nother thing on the Giants, but it's that same sort of carve out of those World Series winners where they don't look like that on paper.
Yep.
The playoffs, they're going to have like three ace quality guys. Two Cy Young winners, Snell, Ray, and then Webb. I mean, they can absolutely go on a run.
Let's call up Affelt and Romo and who am I forgetting? Casilla, all those relievers that were on all three.
Javier Lopez,
that's right. Those four guys out of the bullpen on all three World Series champions. Which of these teams, we flashed up the 10 best records in baseball. They're all separated by only four games. Which of these teams disappoints you the most, Paul? Like as you thought about your preseason expectations and you look at these 10 teams that are all bunched up, which is the one that you're looking at and you're like, how are they not better?
I mean, I'm more nervous. They haven't necessarily disappointed me yet. I think they have a chance to disappoint us in the playoffs, which is the Orioles.
Yeah.
Because where's their pitching right now? Even Burnsy isn't at peak Burns. He's very good. He's still very much an ace front runner there, but not like dominating everyone, striking out all the time. And with Grayson out, we don't know what he's going to be when they come back. So I'm kind of like pre-worried about them. As far as to date, I don't know. I didn't have the highest expectations for the Yankees, so they're actually kind of improving on that. Same with the Brewers. I thought they could be interesting, but not in first all year like they've been. And the Padres bounced back. So, no, I'm not massively disappointed by any of these teams, but I do think the Orioles have a chance to set up another disappointment as this young team tries to keep learning, because I don't think they're going to have a great postseason. I'm nervous about it.
All right, DFS is on the way out, sir.
All right, so looking at the pitching today, did I lose my sheet? I absolutely did. We got aces today. We got Reagans, Wheeler. I'm in on either of them. I like Blanco as an interesting pivot. He's not super cheap, but he's going against Boston, so he could be underutilized. Robbie Ray is going to be huge. Raylo coming off the IL against that struggling Philly team. That could be another interesting pivot if you're trying to be a little unique with it. Don't get caught up in the Walker Buehler price drop. I'm not in on Buehler and Bobby Miller right now until they show me something. As far as teams that you want to attack, I think you can definitely start to look at Matthew Boyd against the Yankees. I know he pitched well his first time out, but I'm very nervous about him in Yankee Stadium. So you can obviously go with the big Yankees there. And Dean Kramer has not pitched well. I like the Mets against him.
All right. Paul Sporer, everybody. Thank you, Paulie, as always.
Thanks. Take care.
At Spore Fangraphs, Sleeper in the Bus, the name of the podcast. The rare August NBA segment. How many times do you think we did an NBA segment in August, Kelly? Handful of times.
Yeah.
Season win totals. Kelly's Got Thoughts. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.